Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. Early childhood education is becoming an increasingly important national priority. President Obama and his education secretary, Arne Duncan, are actively on the case. The president's had it on his priority list for months. Secretary Duncan reaffirmed administration support here just a couple of weeks ago. There's plenty of evidence that getting kids off to an early start in learning pays dividends in more ways than one. For disadvantaged youngsters, preparation for kindergarten is critical. Otherwise, they're likely to enter schools a year or more behind the performance levels of other students and remain behind for all of their lives. We're talking about the importance of early childhood education on today's program. And with me in studio, Carol Scott, Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Missouri, and Stephen Zwolak, Executive Director of University City Children's Center. Each of their programs focuses on child care and early learning programs. Thanks so much, Carol and Steve, for being with us. Nice to see you.
Thanks, good morning.
John. Good morning.
Before we begin our conversation, I'd like to start with a comment made on this program a couple of months ago by Donald Suggs, who, as you know, is the publisher of the St. Louis American. He listed early childhood education as the single most important priority for this community. Let's listen to him.
I believe the most important thing we could do is address early childhood education. And I think people from across the ideological spectrum agree to that. You get these young people, if they can get started very early, pre-K, you know, with quality programs, I think it could make a huge difference. Now, some of the existing problems is going to be extremely difficult to rest with them and to try to turn them around. But I think if we could start with our young people, very young people, of all the initiatives that are out there, if you ask me what's the most promising in this area, it's early childhood education.
That's Donald Suggs, publisher of the St. Louis American, on this program a couple of months ago. Carol, let me begin with you. Why is this so important?
What happens for children in the first 5 years of their life stays with them for a lifetime. And we know some really concrete, direct line connections between, for example, the vocabulary that children have in the early years, their ability to read at third grade, and that is a direct predictor of high school graduation as well. So it starts from birth, not just pre-K, which is four-year-olds, but from birth. Everything that children are experiencing is building them for success or tearing them down for failure.
And Steve, you're nodding in the affirmation, obviously.
Yeah, well, language development. There's some really wonderful brain research out there by a neuroscientist out of University of Washington, Seattle, who talks about her research is saying that children with appropriate and strong language skills have strong relationship skills. And kids with good relationships have strong language. So what Carol's saying and that language is so key to success for children and the precursor to reading.
Well, and the relationships too, because we know that employers today really need a workforce that is capable of not just getting along with each other in the most basic ways, but really working together in creative, innovative, problem-solving orientations. And so those early social skills and the ability to have kind of an emotional intelligence are crucial as well.
You know, I have some facts here in my notes that I'll read now because it will reinforce what you've said. And I think we'll probably surprise a lot of people in the audience with regard to the importance of what we're talking about. Disadvantaged kids with no preschool education are likely to need special education, more likely to need special education.
True.
They're five times more likely to become chronic lawbreakers by the age of 27. They earn $5,500 a year less than those who had this early education by the age of 40 years old. Less likely to graduate from high school, own their own homes, more likely to have broken marriages. Likely to be slow in developmental and language skills, as you have just suggested. I think that's going to surprise a lot of people that you can connect the dots in that way. You're not surprised.
Not at all. Not at all. And the data are clear from a number of national research studies on those points. And so what we know is those are some of the long-term economic impacts from early care and education. Low quality and even mediocre quality programs that don't do harm but don't really help. Those are the kinds of programs that mean those higher, you know, lower rates of graduation, higher rates of criminal activity, less employment, lower income. And all of those create social service needs, then demands on the society for an economic impact down the line.
Steve, is this just disadvantaged kids that we're talking about?
No, I think so. We put so much focus on underserved populations,
yeah,
but we have a crisis in education right now across the board. We really need to be looking at children from all economic, racial, cultural, the whole spectrum of our social fabric. Looking at supporting children out of all ages, I mean, we are all going to live together, and we need to learn how to live together. When, for example, at University City Children's Center, we have children, we have families with incomes less than $5,000 a year to $200,000. And how do those families get together? This is what represents our world. If we continue to isolate groups and know there's we need to put emphasis on some groups, but if that's all we do, we're not growing a society that's going to provide the workforce that we need. And I took a hiatus from education and went into manufacturing, and it became really clear I had 125 people on the plant, in the plant floor, that I had to manage, and it became real clear they were a bunch of 2-year-olds, and I needed to take all the things that I knew about early childhood and embed it into the workforce. So when you look at employers today, the issues that we're having in the workforce are issues that if you look down the developmental line, you'll find it in the first 5 years of life.
You know, when you stop to think about it, it just occurs to me there's not that much difference between early childhood education and manufacturing, because you have to start with a product and build it and make it right so that it will work.
Absolutely. And it's the people. So when we are helping, when we're helping support adults, when you look at a bad behavior, we can take that bad behavior and root it back into the world of early childhood. And that is one of the key things that we're trying to do through Child Care Aware and through University City Children's Center, the Loom Institute, is how do we help teachers and parents understand the impact of that first 5 years of life.
And this is really something that business people, and particularly people in manufacturing, understand very well. They have a concept that they call Six Sigma, which is about going back to the beginning of a process and looking at all the steps along the way that produces the end product and intervening at the earliest point possible to solve a problem. Well, the Six Sigma in education is the first 5 years of life.
Right. While we're on the subject of the impact, as you both know, Education Secretary Arne Duncan was in town just a couple of weeks ago and talking about the very thing that we're talking about today, early childhood education. Let's hear what he had to say on the impact on the rest of the lives of these youngsters.
In short, high-quality early learning can and often does literally transform the life chances of young children. The President's plan is comprehensive. It will support a high-quality, seamless continuum of early learning opportunities from birth through age 5 that would help prepare infants, toddlers, and young children not just for success in kindergarten, but for the rest of their lives.
Well, there we are. That's what you've just been saying is reinforced by the Secretary of Education. However, it's one thing to talk about it, as he and the President have done. It's another thing to do something about it. Where are we, Carol, in regard to doing something more than we're doing about it?
Well, the state of Missouri has pretty systematically over the past several years reduced the amount of investment in quality improvements. So the things that the state was funding that would strengthen the knowledge base in the workforce in child care and early education, provide for the kind of coaching that directors and owners of programs need to deliver a program that has positive child outcomes. Because as we were referring to before, high quality experiences in the early years can reduce dropouts, can reduce criminal activity, can reduce the need for social services and remedial education. But you only get those outcomes at a certain level of quality. And in fact, for our underserved populations, the lowest incomes, most challenged children, they really have to have the top level of quality to undo what is happening to them in their homes and their communities.
Yeah. President Obama wants to spend $75 billion on all of this. Hadn't gotten much traction yet, Steve.
Well, this is where this living in the state of Missouri is real important. Show me. I need to see it. We have all the data out there. We have incredible brain research. 95% of the architecture of the brain is developed by 5. 95%. And yet 2% of our gross revenues are going into early childhood mm-hmm. education. So there's an imbalance there. So 95% of the brain is developed by 5. And so let's think about that. So we are really impacting a generation every 5 years. I mean, really impacting, very seriously impacting a generation every 5 years. And yet, with all the data points, and I know Carol has more that she can share on that, we still keep doing the same thing. And we have data that says that it's the soft stuff, the character and values, the emotional development of a child that lays the foundation for a child to take academic risk. We have all that laid out for us. But what are we doing in our schools?
Well, can you answer that question beyond what you've just said?
Well, I worry. Yeah. You know, I really worry. We know there's an economist, a Nobel laureate economist, James Heckman, who talks about we're measuring the wrong things in our schools, and we need to be measuring the soft stuff. So and I'll say at University City Children's Center, we have been measuring the soft stuff. We have 7 years' worth of data on soft stuff.
Well, explain. A
child's ability to attach. A child's ability to develop self-control. How do they implement initiative, and how does that all impact the behaviors, the day-to-day behaviors? So we've been measuring those soft things around children, and so what we see is children are developing stronger attachments. As soon as they start developing stronger attachments, their ability to develop self-control increases. Their ability to initiate increases, and the bad behaviors diminish. And we're seeing real strong trends in this measuring the soft stuff. Now, the next step of that has been it's also impacting our children's ability to develop core knowledge. So the hypothesis lies for us in that as we measure the soft stuff and support children in developing relationships, that their ability to be academic risk takers increases.
And I think that's what the leaders of our business workforce know as well, is those soft skills in the workplace also foster the kind of innovative thinking and creation and problem solving that corporations need to succeed in this economy.
Are corporations getting involved in this? Are they helping with funding? Are they hands-on?
All over the country, business leaders are getting involved in early childhood education. There's a wonderful national-level organization called Ready Nation that is sort of the go-to hub for all of that activity. And many states have business councils, business roundtables focused specifically on early childhood education.
Yeah, and as an organization, we are finding more and more business support. We are doing presentations to the business leaders talking about how can they invest in early childhood. And it's not just here's a nickel, here's a dime. It's if you want good workforce, if you want a good solid workforce, this is what you need to do. And if we invest in early childhood education, you're going to be better off, and St. Louis is going to be better in the region.
I want to pick up on that point when we come back. We have to take our first break. We'll do that now. My guest in studio, Carol Scott, Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Missouri. Stephen Zwolak is Executive Director of University City Children's Center. We certainly want to get you into the conversation. What have your experiences been with early childhood education? Love to hear from you. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL On Air. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our conversation on early childhood education. Before we continue that conversation, here are some of the stories you'll hear about starting at 3 on St. Louis Public Radio today. President Obama is delivering major speeches about the economy in Galesburg, Illinois, and in Warrensburg, Missouri, at Central Missouri University. Missouri Republican U.S. Senator Roy Blunt is holding a conference call rebutting the president's plan. And a U.S. Senate committee chaired by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin is examining the implications of closing the Guantanamo Bay detention facility. These stories and more beginning at 3 and throughout the day on our website, stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Carol Scott and Stephen Zwolak on early childhood education. Steve, you were mentioning a moment ago the importance of this investment that we're talking about. Once again, let me turn to Education Secretary Arne Duncan and hear how he put it during his recent visit to St. Louis.
The first takeaway is that investing in high-quality early learning is the best educational investment that we as a nation can make. As President Obama says, it's the best bang for the educational buck because it has such a high ROI, or return on investment.
Secretary of Education Arnie Duncan during a recent visit to St. Louis. Let me come back to something that I must ask about, because we all agree on the importance of this, but Steve and Carol and I grew up at a time when there wasn't so much attention paid to all of this. We seem to turn out okay. What is the difference between our
question? That.
Well, of course, that's always subject to some question. But you see what I'm getting at is there was not much discussion about this sort of thing. Do we lose a generation or two in the process?
You know, in 1960, 10% of the children were in care outside the home. And 2005, there were 70% of the children under five in care full time outside the home. And now, who's taking care of those children? And the pace of our life, we talk about, we'll say, is childhood changing? And people go, yes, it's changing. But child development's not. We have a tendency to let the changes in childhood and the nanosecond, all the fast-pacedness of it, the technology, run how we're relating to children. And what the brain is saying and what the researchers are saying is children still need laps. They need time to think. They need time to play. They need time that our nanosecond world is not giving them. So I think there's that's really impacting what we see. These kids are overprogrammed and moving at a very, very fast pace.
Carol Scott, it seems to me that what Steve is saying, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, and he can respond to this, is because of the difference between 1960 and today, what we've done is we've taken parents out of the equation. That would, to me, indicate how important the parental influence would have to be.
Well, it is very important, and really we shouldn't be taking parents out of the equation at all. They should be working in partnership with the other places that their children are when they have
but
to work.
But they come home, they work, they come home tired, and, you know, it's a different situation than 1960.
And I think more concerning is that, you know, over 300,000 children in Missouri under the age of six have all of their available parents working outside the home. Either they're in two-income families where both parents work, or they're in a single-parent family with a working parent. And we only have enough licensed child care to serve between 25 and 50% of those kids in most of the counties in the state. So that means that other working parents are cobbling together, you know, some little patchwork of, you know, in the morning they're over here with grandma, and in the afternoon they go over to Aunt Sally's house because we can't find any licensed child care or any unlicensed child care that we feel is appropriate quality.
Okay. Well, and Carol is the expert on this, and through Child Care Aware, you can find all the child cares throughout the state, everybody who's licensed, and they have so much data and information, and she has firsthand knowledge of where the voids are. Mm. And that's really a concern. And when you're living, knowing what the voids are. To step back into parenting, we have two really important constituents that we have to help. We have to support teachers. Every teacher we help understand the importance of early childhood education, quality early childhood education, the emotional development of children. That is 10 to 20 children that teacher is touching. Mm-hmm. And we have to educate families and in understanding how to slow their pace down and the importance of slowing their pace down and to start building families with this in the era of what I call genuine encounters, where people are speaking with their kids and they're talking with their kids, not at their kids. A more modern day phrase that has been detrimental to the relationship is parents using the phrase, wait a minute. It's never a minute. Mm-hmm. And so how do we reduce it and operationalize the emotional connections between parent and child and teacher and child?
Key question.
Yeah, it is. And I also think that there's a really disturbing amount of just plain not noticing children, even by their parents. I had a little experience walking out of the mall last night behind a mom and a preschooler, and there was another adult woman with the mom, and the mom was pushing a stroller with a younger child in it. And the little four-year-old trailing behind the two women was talking nonstop, asking questions, commenting on what he saw, asking for things, and neither of the two women ever turned around and acknowledged that he was there or that he was speaking with them. Not one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who knows how stifling that can be, too. At some point, the questions will stop.
That's right.
You know, and they'll just tune out.
That whole issue that I raised right at the beginning about vocabulary development in the early years is tied to third grade reading success, tied to high school graduation. If you don't talk with the children, they're not going to develop vocabulary. They get it from us.
They're finding successful college graduates have had good self-control at four. And there's a study being done at Harvard looking at that right now. How successful are they and their early childhood development? So we have data points coming from all over, all the constituents. And now here in St. Louis, one of the things that University City Children's Center is doing through an internal organization called the Loom Institute, we are building a facility down at 20th and Biddle, right on the same land as the Vaughan Housing Project in 6106. We're going to be serving 154 children, and it's going to be a good opportunity to – and that zip code has some of the worst demographics that you can find. And we're going to have an opportunity to impact children and families using some of the approaches that we've discovered at UCCC in supporting and being supported by child care. We're going to put all these partners together in this community and put a full court press to support the children in that community.
Is there any kind of a number that you folks use with regard to the number of kids out there who are, I'll use the term, at risk, for lack of a better phrase? When you talk about 158, I assume that's a drop in the bucket.
It's a drop in the bucket.
It is a drop in the bucket. I don't have those numbers off the top of my
head.
But
we're talking thousands.
Yes,
we're probably talking thousands.
We are. And in Missouri, you know, folks in the urban core central areas of our cities, like Kansas City and St. Louis, they have the same kinds of issues with finding licensed and quality childcare that their neighbors in rural counties have. It's exactly the same problem, but they don't come together across that rural-urban divide to solve the problem.
And the solution to that problem is what?
Partly that solution is about maybe changing the expectations. So right now in Missouri, we have a pretty big category of unlicensed child care. Anyone who cares for, and I would point out, educates children in their home as a business can serve up to four children not related to them and as many children as they want who are related to them and remain unlicensed. That's a category that in which you can be unlicensed. And that's a huge exemption, especially for our rural areas and in our urban core. Family child care businesses like those are the predominant source of child care. They are much more prevalent than centers.
Did you want to say something, Steve?
Well, I want to say one of the strategies that we're using is we're part of Child Care Aware of the Eastern Region, Eastern Missouri, and we're responsible for trying to touch 10,000 teachers on the eastern side of the state. So if we multiply that up at 10, that's 100,000 children that we can impact by impacting teachers. So if we do our work well, we can impact 100,000 plus children. So that's one strategy. But to dance back to, I think, one of the key issues that's going to be sustainable is how do we get the business leaders in our community, how do we get them to go to pick up the gauntlet for children, for young children? People are talking K-12. Now they're talking pre-K, but it's birth and prenatal. So we have to rally our business leaders in a different way than they've been rallied before.
Mm-hmm. But Carol, you just said a couple of moments ago that the business community is coming around.
In other states, yes. A little less so here in Missouri. So, I was talking about business councils and business roundtables in other states, and we don't really have something like that yet in Missouri. I think it's a really great direction for us to go because we don't necessarily need our business leaders and our corporate CEOs to be solving this problem with their checkbooks. We need them to solve it with their political influence, frankly. Mm-hmm. They are the people that legislators will listen to. People like Steve and I have a hard time getting taken seriously at the same level as someone who can, you know, frankly, drop a couple hundred thousand into a coffer for a campaign.
I believe the expression is money talks.
Money does talk.
We've been learning a lot about how it talks in the political war. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. We have a number of people, not surprisingly, wanting to get into the conversation. I'm going to start with Claire, who is calling from Wildwood. Claire, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. This is a wonderful program. I've been impressed very much with the Parents as Teachers program, which has been, distressingly, there's been funding cut for that. And I know firsthand from several families close to me that that has helped parents tremendously look at how their children are progressing at very early ages. Could our guests, who, by the way, thank you both, you're just so dedicated, thank you so much, could you comment on, has that been an impact? Have you seen a negative or positive impact, first of all, of the program itself and the results of the pulling of funding, which our state has recently done?
Absolutely, Claire. Thank you so much for bringing up Parents as Teachers, because for that birth to three population, home visiting is a significant part of the federal strategy under Obama and under Duncan and Secretary Sebelius at Health and Human Services. The cutting of funding for Parents as Teachers in Missouri has reduced the number of children who can be served. The Parents as Teachers programs have pulled back their service delivery to focus on assessment for the most for their primary service, and very little of the home visiting. It remains in some of the areas and some of the school districts where the funding is very low. It has definitely had a significant impact.
Claire, thanks for the call. While we're talking about parents as teachers, how about Head Start? What's its role in all of this?
Well, we are a Head Start partner at University City Children's Center, and I'm really proud to be part of Head Start. It is really, really hard. There are so many requirements. There's over 2,000 requirements that we have to fulfill. So sometimes I find that we get locked into more of the external things than we are the internal
red
things.
Red tape bureaucracy.
The processes are coming from a right place. They want the best for children. And I know we're partnering with the Y Head Start, as well as we're getting ready to partner with the Grace Hill Head Start on the Flant Center project down in St. Louis. And there is a rallying cry of the leadership to do something that's very special, very unique. And I actually had a Head Start monitoring visit this morning, and they were deeply buying into the emotional development. How do we support children's emotional development so we can get them to execute the cognitive skills and the academic thinking? So I think everybody is at the point of growing, and mm-hmm. we can grow together in this. And again, I keep going, how do we get business involved in this? And we create this inspirational rally cry for early childhood, completely different, that has never been done in St. Louis or Missouri before.
It involves a lot of coordination. Yeah. I mean, you can't go off charging and separate directions.
No. That is absolutely correct. Right. And I think we have an advantage in Missouri that the Missouri Coordinating Board for Early Childhood Education was established many years ago. So we already have had the major state departments who provide funding for early childhood education and some of their partners in the nonprofit and corporate arena working with them. Mm-hmm. Long before the Head Start Act reauthorization required every state to have a similar council. So we have a bit of a head start on that and are doing well with coordinating.
Right. There's one area I wanted to get into at some point, but I'm going to have Art do it. He's calling from St. Louis. I think he'll bring us into the area that I was interested in. Go ahead, Art.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call, Don. You know, as I started to watch the decline of the educational system, I come back to William Cottmire. You probably remember him back in 1967. When Tom Eagleton, Daniel Schlafly, the president of the SLU, commented upon his passing with respect to his demise when it was written up in the paper there. He published over 200 different textbooks for McGraw-Hill. He indicated that if you don't have a child with the skills for reading by the fourth grade, you've lost them. He went over to Germany after World War II, helped set up their educational system, evidently he imparted a secret to them with respect to developing the initiative. I think the people there ought to expound on how do you develop the initiative. Do you throw out the TV out of the window to get the kids' nose into the textbooks? I'm sort of interested in just what ideas these people have and if they've ever read anything by William Kottmeyer.
Art, the what a legend. Kottmeyer and Krauss were the authors of a lot of that that literature.
Good German names.
And now there's some really strong neuroscience around children. If children can develop language skills by two, appropriate language skills by two, the likelihood of them developing their pre-reading skills by five increases significantly. Is they have the pre-reading skills by five, the likelihood of them being strong readers by eight prevails. Now, the flip side is if they don't have the good language skills and there's not a relationship to facilitate the good language skills, the likelihood of them having the pre-reading skills by five diminish and so on. And by eight, if they can't read, some of the science is saying that children will not be able to learn how to read. They can learn word recognition, but not the concepts of reading. So what we're dancing, if we dance what Kottmeyer is saying back into the first 5 years of life and how the relationships drive the academic ability to become the reader that you're referring to, that it's relationships drive all of these pieces, and we can't take those lightly. It's children at infancy sitting on the lap of their mothers and their fathers and hearing the motherese and the fatherese and feeling the joy of language and the joy of reading. This is how we're going to change that trend. It's not to be fixed at 7, 8, or 9 years of age. It's to be started and facilitated at birth. So it's really an important question, and you bring up just one of the most important parts of going on in our world.
You know, I've heard all of my life that the brains of young people are like sponges. That's why it's great to start them in foreign languages, because they just absorb all this stuff,
right,
just like a sponge does. But we seem to have gotten away from recognizing that and dealing with it, given the kinds of situations we're talking about today. We've got to take another break. We'll come back. Lots of phone calls. We'll get to them as soon as we come back. My guests in studio, Carol Scott, Executive Director of Child Care Aware of Missouri. Stephen Zwolak is Executive Director of the University City Children's Center. Back with more of your questions and more conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the importance of early childhood education. Just picking up on something that Art said a little while ago about the Germans and the work that went on in Germany. Where are we with regard to other countries in this? Are we behind as we are in so many things? Do we know?
We do see that there are some models of high quality systems in other countries that we can learn from. And also, really, Don, right here in the United States, we have some states that are doing a really stellar job with this. So Missouri doesn't have to cross any oceans to find a good example of how to create a system for the youngest years. We've got them here.
What are some of those states?
North Carolina is widely recognized as being
North Carolina, a
great example of an early childhood system. I know. Indiana is considered a very good model, and Washington State, also Oklahoma, surprisingly.
Let's go back to the phones. This is a fascinating discussion. I thank you both for it. Let's bring in Paul calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me join the call. You know, one of the shining stars of early childhood education is high-fidelity Montessori. And Dr. Stephen Hughes, he's the former president of the American Board of Pediatric Neuropsychology, called Montessori the total developmental package. And so I think when we talk about education, it's got to be framed not only within the notion of what our current workforce needs, but what's possible. So whether you're talking about the founders of Google, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, or Jeff Bezos of Amazon, or the founder of Wikipedia, they were all Montessori kids. So I think much more than simply developing education that meets the current needs of our workforce, we have to develop an education method like Montessori that allows children to create a new workforce overall.
I think that, you know, I think you bring up a very good point, Paul. There are a number of really good, high-quality models for early education, and certainly Montessori is a long time and respected one, as is the HiSCOPE model out of Ypsilanti, Michigan, and Project Construct right here in Missouri. We created the Project Construct curriculum framework back in the late 80s and early 90s here in Missouri. And I think the key term that you use that is important for all of those is high fidelity. Lots of people say that they're doing Montessori or Project Construct or HiSCOPE, and the question is there high fidelity to the model that produced the outcomes in the original research? So I think we have to really look at how well we are teaching teachers to use good curriculum approaches, and so that teacher education component comes up as really crucial.
Yeah, the other thing, Paul, you talk about is kids, they're really natural innovators. And in the panic of our educational system, as we try to skill drill our kids, even our preschoolers, to death, that we're driving the natural innovation away from children. And we have an opportunity for children to splash in puddles and to do things and to think about the physics, the science, and the math involved in all those opportunities, which are joyful opportunities. And then we are, with those experiences, we're not only promoting the emotional support of children, but the intellectual and the value component, but we're enabling them to think about innovating. How many different ways can I jump that puddle? How, you know, what can I do to make the splash go this way, that way? And these are real live experiences that our children are losing because, you know, when September comes, don't be surprised if we see a bunch of our preschool kids sitting in desks with number two pencils sharpened. That's a problem. And we're not going to be able to help children just to get it from that one-dimensional perspective. It has to be a holistic approach.
How much of a difference is there between private early childhood education and public early childhood education?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question, Don, and I'm not sure that the differences line up that way. I think that there is public early childhood education that is very, very good, very high quality. There is also public education that is absolutely abysmal, just as there is in our K through 12 education system. And also, I mentioned earlier the difference between licensed and unlicensed early childhood programs. You also can find good quality in an unlicensed program. It depends on the person running it, the person doing the educating.
Does that suggest there's not enough oversight of all of it?
I think it suggests that there's not enough respect for the profession of educating young children. It's seen as babysitting or watching children or caring for children rather than also educating them.
So in many ways, you're starting from square one, right?
To build that perception?
Yeah.
Well, I think we've actually come a long way in that perception. Yeah. I would say that there are a large number of parents who understand that brain development is happening and that the places that their children are living during the day make a big difference in that brain development for their kids. And I think that there are still an awful lot of parents who've never heard the term brain development, and we need to change that.
We had a call from Philip who couldn't stay on the line. He said, in what way is diversity, awareness, sensitivity included in early childhood programs?
Well, I think that's one of those we're missing the boat on our understanding of diversity. We need to think about diversity beginning in infancy, and it's not usually the time when people think about diversity. But as soon as a child understands others outside of self, that is the beginning of diversity. And how do we start embedding it as part of the brain development, as part of the hardwiring cast of skills, understandings, and emotions? We needs to be built in as part of their character beginning at infancy, as opposed to waiting until 4, 5, 6, or even in elementary school. And it becomes, if we weave diversity and the concepts around diversity in early childhood, it becomes part of the fabric. It doesn't become an activity. And so much of our training has become an activity. And so that becomes somewhat of a interesting dilemma for us.
Yeah.
My father used to say, and I'm sure he didn't originate it, as the twig is bent, so grows the tree.
That is correct.
And that's exactly what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Wisdom.
Yeah.
It is.
And very simply put. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones, bring in Rob calling from Belleville. Thanks for waiting, Rob. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. I've served on a school board, and I have a huge amount of respect for teachers, especially those pre-K teachers. They do amazing work, and they love those kids so well. But I did want to bring up an issue that came up in some of our discussions as a school board member, is that there was a study done in early 2010 by the Department of Health and Human Services where they looked at the Head Start program, and they did a national random assignment experiment and where kids were randomly assigned either to do Head Start or not. And in that study, there were 19 measures of cognitive impacts at the end of kindergarten and 22 that were done at the end of first grade. And of those 41 measures, only one showed any type of significant or positive impact. And, you know, this was, I think, highlighted in the book Freakonomics. And, you know, the idea is saying that it sounds like a great idea. And often what it is that the attendance of preschool programs is more of a correlation and not a cause when it comes to doing well later in your educational career. So I guess I just wanted you to address this issue of is that how do we know that it's not just a correlation and not when studies like this that are randomly assigned show that the cause is not very strongly indicated?
Well, of course, as a longtime researcher and academician, I can tell you that all research is based on correlation, not cause. You cannot produce any kind of data that will show you definitely that something is a cause of something else in research. But more difficult about the Head Start study results, more challenging, is that the results are being described out of context, without the understanding of the methodology of the study. And in fact, those two supposedly discrete groups of children who got Head Start and children who didn't get Head Start, really there was kind of a lot of muddiness in that. So many of the children who were chosen because they were not going to Head Start wound up getting Head Start anyway at some point during the intervention. And many of the children who were counted as being in Head Start maybe were only there for a couple of months and then they were gone. So we're really measuring something that's much more mushy than a discrete, yes, they got it, no, they didn't. The dose of the amount of something that you get is certainly very important. And there's really no data in that study about the dose of the two different groups.
Thanks, Rob, so much for the call. Let's bring in Jerry. He's calling from O'Fallon, Missouri. Jerry, always good to talk to you.
No, good morning. Yes, I remember several years ago hearing a retiring prison warden, and he was asked what he would do to change the system or you know, make things better. And the first thing he said was early childhood education. And it seems like you know, in the interest of cutting spending, we are literally saving pennies, and we're paying dollars on the other end, and that's not even taking into account the, you know, human and social suffering that takes place because we, you know, failed, you know, to educate our children. And that's the first, you know, and you look at any successful society, and that's their first priority.
And we have that same wisdom right here in Missouri. The director of our Department of Corrections, George Lombardi, is very fond of telling people that to interdict some of the causes of people winding up in his prisons, that takes early childhood education. He's a great supporter and is a member of the Missouri Children's Services Commission.
Successful cultures are built around children, and so we have centuries of understanding around that, and this is where we need to get Missouri to start thinking about investing in our kids differently.
I have in my notes here, early childhood education called an investment. You save $7 on each dollar invested in other remedial expenses.
Right.
So you get them started early. You save those $7 down the road. By the way, this has just been brought into me, speaking of investment. We mentioned earlier that President Obama is speaking at Galesburg, Illinois, mm-hmm. at Knox College. He's speaking right now. He talked about education and moments ago said, and I quote him here, "If you think education is expensive, wait until you see how much ignorance costs in the 21st century." Mr. Obama is also touting his Preschool for All plan, which Secretary of Education Artie Duncan addressed when he was in St. Louis last month.
Yeah.
Good news, I'm sure.
Yeah,
for you
absolutely.
To hear the president speaking like that again. But he's been saying this before.
Yeah.
Right, and that figure that you're talking about, that $7 for every dollar invested, that takes all of the long-term outcomes of early childhood education, like increased graduation rates, increased attendance at college, and so forth. But there are also some very immediate impacts. Fully investing in early care and education would create thousands of new jobs in Missouri. For every 4 jobs created in early childhood education, 1 job is created outside that sector in the economy.
Wow. But who needs jobs, right?
Yeah, apparently we don't in Missouri.
You know, I am a practitioner. I'm a blue collar early childhood person, and so when we hear the big ideas about preschool for all, yes, I want to rally around preschool for all, but I also want to rally around quality preschool for all. And I think that we for years we were talking about access. People needed access. We gave them access and we gave them bad access. So if we're going to talk about quality of a preschool for all, we need to make sure that we are providing quality programs, not just taking – if a school district should do that for the district, just don't bring somebody from 5th grade down to early childhood. That we need to have people that are highly trained or, no, highly developed early childhood educators.
Well, that's why I brought up the issue of oversight before. Perhaps I should have used the word standards, that there be certain standards that are met at all levels and in all states, maybe using those states that you mentioned, Carol, as being the best.
Absolutely. And, you know, many, many states in the United States have something called a quality rating and improvement system. It's a way of providing the consumer and the program who is offering the service to the consumer a way of looking objectively at the level of quality. It has standards for the program itself, the curriculum and what happens in the classroom, standards for the personnel, and standards for the management of the program. And when, you know, think of it like a star rating system for a hotel. So it's a 4-star, 3-star, et cetera. When our lowest income, most vulnerable children receive 1, 2, and 3-star quality services, they either go backwards in their development or they stay the same. They only improve in those highest quality 4- and 5-star programs. And that's based on data right here in Missouri.
You know, we've talked about the president. We've talked about Secretary Duncan. And we've talked about the proposals to get something rolling on this. It all really is dependent on funding. And let's take one more clip from Mr. Duncan with regard to funding the kinds of things that we're talking about.
Let me be clear. It is not going to be accomplished through social impact bonds alone. It is not going to be done by diverting money from Head Start. It's not going to be done through a slightly bigger Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge program. And it's not going to be done by wishful thinking. How will it get done? By a tenacious commitment coming from all of us to do what is right for children, including doing the tough work in Congress and in states to find real revenue streams to finally create a world-class system of early learning for our nation and for our nation's children.
Well, Mr. Duncan, the Secretary of Education, asks, how will it get done? My question to you is, do you guys think it will get done? Steve?
Well, I'm going to dance back to the Flant Center down at our North City project that we're working on. It's only 154 children, but yet we can establish criteria that can prove to others that it can get done in some of the most underserved populations. And we're actually going to have it is going to be mixed income. So that becomes another dynamic that we want to tell others that this can get done in a collaborative fashion, which it's going to have its challenges, but it has the potential to really be one of the nation leading programs in the country. So I'm pretty excited about where we're going with that. So,
I'm very excited too. And I think, you know, Steve brings up a specific example of something that we need more of, which is business models that work for high quality service delivery. We have sold a bill of goods to a lot of our child care center owners who are operating smaller facilities, 60, 70 kids, that they can have a good quality program. There is not an economic model. There's not a financial model for their business that will allow them to do that. There simply is not. We need different approaches and business models.
We only have a couple of seconds left. Steve, you mentioned the Loom Institute before.
Right.
Very quickly, in a few seconds, what is that?
Loom Institute is the vehicle for taking what we've learned at University City Children's Center, the successes that we've learned and UCCC, and we're going to export that program model to other communities.
And we have chosen Loom Institute as our partners, Child Care Aware of Eastern Missouri partner in the state, because of that very thing. They have a model that works.
All right. And we should also point out that Steve over here, just across the table from me, is the executive director of the Loom Institute, correct?
Thank you.
Wanted to get that in there.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Well, you know, I'm so happy you two guys came here today. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I hope that some of the people that you want to hear the message that you brought with you today are listening and can get on the stick with regard to this issue. It's clearly very important, and it's important to people at the highest levels. Next step is to get something done about the need. Thank you very much, Carol Scott. Wonderful to see you, Executive Director of the Child Care Aware of Missouri. And Stephen Zwolak, Executive Director of the University City Children's Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
Keep up the good work, folks. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with the author of a new book, Missouri's Wicked Route 66, Gangsters and Outlaws on the Mother Road. Do you have a favorite location along Route 66? Let us know what it is. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at our website. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.